Good evening. Calling to order this meeting of the Carson City Airport Authority on Wednesday, August 21st, 2019. And can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Golden.
Here.
Vice Chair Harris.
Here.
Treasurer Rogers.
Here.
Member Barrett.
Here.
Member Hamilton.
Here.
Member Law.
Here.
Member Simmons.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Fantastic. Bradley, can you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to go to the approval of the minutes of past meetings from the Airport Authority. Has everyone had a chance to look at those? Any comments? Anyone? Going once, twice, three times? Anyone want to make a motion to approve the minutes of prior meetings?
So move.
I will second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Meetings of the past minutes. Minutes of the past meetings are approved as voted on. Modification of the agenda. Does anyone want to modify the agenda? I have no need to. Yes, Ken.
Chair Golden, I'd like to recommend that we take item number 3, the A.J. Gallagher presentation, as the second item after we do the presentation, the public comment, and the presentation, and the discussion about the meeting time. I think that'll be pretty brief.
Okay.
And then we'll just follow up the rest of the agenda.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's make, so we're making item 3, item 2.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks.
Works by me. At this point, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority can speak on any agendized or non-agendized matters related to the airport. Your comments are limited to 3 minutes per person, per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, then you can request that we calendar this item for a future Airport Authority meeting. Any members of the public care to speak? Go ahead, Dennis.
Good evening. Dennis Jean Greco, Sierra Skyways.
Mike.
Yeah, hit your mic, please.
Okay. Sierra Skyways. I'm here. At my own expense, I had my lease reevaluated by William Kimmel. And I'm here to see if I can get my lease agenda-sized to renegotiate my lease that is, it seems very out of whack. I know I didn't do my due diligence originally when I signed up for this whole thing, and I want to see if we can come to some kind of understanding with my lease with the Airport Authority.
Okay. So you're requesting that the matter be agendized to a later date, is that correct?
Yeah, because I can't do it in this form, yes.
Okay, we can do that in September. Let me, though, lay out a couple of ground rules.
Sure.
As chairperson of the Airport Authority, this Airport Authority will not be negotiating with you in a public forum, so that will not happen under any circumstances.
That's fine.
Okay. Now, what I would recommend you do is have this discussion offline, in other words, not during the Airport Authority meeting, with our manager, Ken Moen, with our attorney, who is absent today, Steve Takis,
okay,
and also have the discussion as you see and deem appropriate with individual members of the Airport Authority before that matter gets onto the agenda and before you come into the meeting. So, again, we want to come in with a plan,
sure,
of attack, if you will.
Correct.
And again, just to reiterate, we're not here to negotiate with anybody. That's not our, our role. So let's make sure that it, you know, is in a managed process.
Sure.
So that when it gets here, if there's something that we can make a decision on.
There's something to make a decision on.
That's right. Exactly. So any questions about that?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. I think we ought to have that on the September agenda, Ken. And I'll let you and other members of the authority work with Mr. Gian Greco. And Dennis, you work with Steve Takis also.
Sure.
And, you know, give us everything we need to know about what we need to know.
That paperwork there, I, at my expense, had William relook at my lease with, I mean, my appraisal with Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So he outlined a bunch of things on there.
And this is great. This way, let me direct members of the airport authority to take this with you, do some homework between now and the September meeting.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Okay. Any other comment from members of the public? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go on to a presentation to Donna Clark, the Executive Director of the Eagle Valley Children's Home. Ken?
Thank you. I'm going to invite Donna to join me up here in the front. I don't know if maybe I can take the mic with me. We can do this now that we have wireless. And I'm also going to invite Carol Park to join me. You guys, you can grab a seat. That way, if you get asked a question, you can respond. Yeah, come on up. Yeah, sure. I feel like a game show host. Carol is the events coordinator with the Elks Lodge here in Carson City, and she helped organize the effort for our beer sales. I thought we weren't going to be able to have that, and I thought if you're going to have a chicken wing contest, you got to have at least some adult beverage to go with the wings. And so Carol, the Elks Lodge does have a liquor license, and so we were able to work out an agreement where they did the pouring for us with the liquor license, and we paid the insurance as part of our expense, and then we collected those funds. And as part of our agreement for that, we made a donation to the Elks Lodge in the neighborhood of $500, of which they're graciously going to donate to our charity for the event, the Eagle Valley Children's Home. And so Carol and I gave her that check yesterday. And then today we invited Donna to come and receive a check from the Airport Authority, because as I discussed earlier in the year that with the open house, that we were going to adopt a charity locally, and I believe we discussed at length why we chose Eagle Valley Children's Home. Been here since 1946, correct? And they do incredible service here in the community, and I felt what a great way to find a real local charity that we can help support. One of the things I asked Donna to do is if we could create an endowment that these donations that we get over the next, I don't know how long this relationship lasts, but I kind of see it in perpetuity, at least while I'm here. And so that means maybe a year. she agreed to do that, and I think that's a great way to honor the Carson City Airport Authority's work in the community. And so this year we have a couple donations that we're going to add on top of that. AJ Gallagher, who is on our agenda coming up, is donating $300 that's going directly to the Eagle Valley Children's Home. And then there was a tenant on our airfield that had a hangar for sale, and I gave him a lead for that hangar that it ultimately sold, and I suggested that he make a donation to the Eagle Valley Children's Home. And so we are just going to pile on for this as best we can. So I have a check that I'd like to present to Donna in the name of the Carson City Airport Authority for $3,963.61. So if you want to hit your button, there you go.
I want to thank all of you so much for including us in this event. Our clients have gone for a few years, so it was an event that we already participated in and enjoyed. A little bit about Eagle Valley, if you aren't aware, but I did bring in a bunch of brochures and my card. We have 18 clients that live with us right now full-time. Our youngest boys, we have 3 9-year-olds, which is a great challenge, and the ages go up until 53. So it is a variety of ages, but all of our clients have intellectual and developmentally disabilities, severe or profound diagnosis. Many are in wheelchairs, walkers, different kinds of things like that. But we also, what we do for our clients is we're a training facility, and we try to have them become as independent as possible. And that might be with just making a choice of what shirt to wear in the morning. It might be feeding themselves. We do a whole variety of all living skills throughout their days. And so it's a continuous training program. I have been there now. It'll be 25 years in October. And I started there as the recreation coordinator, went up to a program coordinator, and just in April became the executive director. So this is all new to me, and it's very exciting. It's a new challenge. But you having this event and allowing us to be part of it gets our name out in the community as well. We're usually thought of as an orphanage, and that is not the case. So it's a really good way to get our name out there, get people interested in what we do. And I'm telling you, it is the most amazing place. And I've always said I'm going to retire here, or unless I get fired. But I was going to retire there. So I'm on my way. I'm getting there. So, but I just want to say how appreciative I am of this. This will go to good use for our clients. And just thank you so much. Thank you.
Just send them a picture.
Call.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound or hash sign.
Ready? Ken, you can get all the names we can send with the picture, right? Super. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please announce yourself.
I just got them over the
Carson City Airport Authority.
Oh, yeah. And that's up substantially. I think it was a
hello?
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 No, someone joined?
Yeah, I was just going to put him on hold.
Hello?
Do I have to push a button?
Yeah.
Could we put you on hold for a moment?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Do I push a button? This button?
Okay. My name is Carol Park, and I am an events coordinator for the Elks Lodge, number 2177 in Carson City. And Ken reached out to me to help with the beer sales at the open house. I was very happy to receive that request. I had to jump through a few hoops to get it done, but he called me on Wednesday, and we were set up on Saturday. So things went very smoothly. I will tell you that the reason I responded quickly to his request was that as an organization, a charitable organization, the Elks Lodge does have a lot of interest in providing services and donations for kids, and especially children at risk. The state association donates a lot of money to the Nevada Welfare Division to support a program called Safe Haven, and that's a program that supports children at risk when they're removed from the home. and given protective housing until they can be placed in a foster home. So this was, to me, very much in our bailiwick of supporting kids in our community in a certain way. And I'm very pleased that we were able to make a donation to that. I don't have a check with me because I have to jump through some more hoops to get that check. But I thank Ken for the opportunity to, number one, donate to a very worthwhile cause, and number two, allow the Elks to have some visibility in the community. And to me, the more we are recognized in the community, the more we are able to give back to the community. And that's basically what we do do. We donate, we have fundraisers, we make money, and we give it away. And to me, that's a very fulfilling thing. I have been a nurse for over 50 years. I have been in the facility when I worked with the state of Nevada, and so I know exactly what goes on there, the training and the support and the dignity, especially, that they give to the residents there. So I won't take any more of your time. I will just say thank you for the donation, and thank you for the opportunity, Ken, to let us serve in that capacity, and I hope we'll be asked again.
June 27th.
June 27th, it's on my list. Thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't give me a microphone.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so we're moving on to agenda item number one. For discussion and possible action regarding rescheduling the Airport Authority meeting dates and time, 4 p.m. instead of 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of the month. Go ahead, Ken.
I'll keep this brief. I want this really to be something we just think about. One of the things I did is I reached out to the scheduler for this facility, and this facility, this is the latest, one of the latest meetings they have in the community, 6 p.m. start time. And so I asked her about the availability of 4, and she said, yes, that would be doable. And it would actually, there'd be nobody coming in behind us. So that would also work. And I, after our meeting last week, I knew that we were up against the clock. I know Member Barrett occasionally has to a follow-up meeting on the morning after our meeting with the Board of Supervisors, and I know that Member Golden makes the drive back up the lake. And so if we could do a little bit of start earlier, if it accommodates with everybody's schedule, I think that would be beneficial for everyone. And it'd be late enough in the day that if there were an item that somebody would have to maybe leave work to come here and be either to be in the audience or to speak, that it still wouldn't be too over demanding for them to maybe miss an hour of work or stay their lunch or whatever to make that work. So with that being said, that's the detail I really want to share with that. We want to communicate with the legal counsel, of course, see if that works with his schedule. But if that works for the group here, then I think that's something we should discuss. I think there's beneficial for everybody. So that's all I have.
I'll entertain any comments from anyone on the Airport Authority. Start down here with Paul. Go ahead.
Doesn't matter to me, 4 or 6. I'm with whatever anybody wants.
I like the idea of having it earlier. My only possible negative is that it may restrict the people to come on the board. I mean, I don't want us to become a board where only non-working people can attend, and so I think that's worth thinking about. But personally, 4 would be great by me.
I have exactly the same concerns that John does as far as being a restrictive issue for potential members. I might suggest that instead of 4, it be 5 o'clock. That way somebody could come directly from work rather than having to go home and then come back. But other than that, if I were to continue on the board, which I don't plan to, it wouldn't matter to me. But I do think that is an issue that might come up with potential members.
Doesn't matter to me. That's a good suggestion, though, to make for various reasons, including that one. My day today was 7:30 in the morning for NNDA, 6 o'clock at night for this, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I think the 4 or the 5 o'clock p.m. works for me as well. So I'm in.
I can just tell you for 4, it might not work for me. And I've talked to our legal counsel, don't want to make any decisions, and in deference to him, rather he give his input also. I think it would behoove us to try and condense our agenda items as opposed to starting it at 4. The other thing I'm concerned with is, although we don't generally have members of the public in great multitudes coming in here to speak their piece, 4 o'clock is something that certain members of the public might be precluded from. So I have some concerns about that also, but those are my 2 cents, and I would prefer we took no action on this item at this time.
How does the 5 part think? How do you feel?
It's more doable, but I don't want to make any discussion about this without, you know, because I don't want to make this decision that's going to impact others when one of those parties isn't here to speak to his account.
I just was curious as to how you felt about 5. Thanks.
Not real thrilled about it either, but it 4 pretty much opts me out, and I share the other concerns that I heard here. I didn't think about that, about precluding future membership on the airport authority. I really didn't think about that. I thought more about members of the public who may not be able to get off of work and be here for one reason or another. I can tell you that other members of my company who have served on the airport authority would not serve if it was a 4 o'clock start time. It just wouldn't happen with them. So, because they work. So,
do you think that they would have an issue with the 5 o'clock time? And the reason I'm saying this is, generally speaking, even when I was working on salary, if I had a meeting to go to, there were arrangements made so that I could be out of there at 4:45 or shortly before 5. And for the people who are coming to make presentations, I just think it would be easier for them, perhaps, to be at 5:15 or 5:30 rather than have to wait to 6 or 6:30 for their presentations and make them delay them getting home. But I agree with you about Steve. I think we ought to put this on the agenda for September and give ourselves a chance to think it over before that discussion happens.
Yeah, I don't want to even discuss it any further. If anyone else has any comments, fantastic. If not, we'll move on to the next agenda item.
Well, I'll make one brief comment. The Board of Supervisors is probably the biggest council meeting in town, is at 8:30 in the morning. The Reno Tahoe Airport Authority met on at 9 a.m. So I don't think it's unusual to have these type of meetings during the day. Mm-hmm. And I don't want this to misunderstand me, but the legal counsel does work for the board. So it would be more up for him to adjust his schedule to what we're doing. You know, those are all good points. I know that Mr. Simmons, Member Simmons, also holds down a job. So, you know, he would be impacted by that as well. And I know that may impact you as far as the commute from the lake is concerned. But also,
it's not just that. It's also just work.
No, there's several points out there. So those are a lot to consider. But as far as the availability of the facility and the staff here that maintain it, it's available.
Ken, what about condensing our meetings?
Well, the only concern I have about that is I don't want to put the organization in a place where we go, oh, hey, we're done in 90 minutes and we have work to cover.
Understood.
That's my only concern.
Okay. I would rather go that route first and see where it leads.
Well, this is a long day for everybody. I mean, if I get out of here at 8:30 at night, you know, I've been down here since, you know, 7:38 in the morning, so it's a long day for me too. That's part of my job.
Yeah.
I understand.
I hear you.
So it's a change, and I just ask that the board consider, because I think there are some positives. There are obviously some issues to consider and downside that may also be a result. But I want to get it on the agenda so that it gives time for people to think about it, and we can come back to it.
Okay, fair enough.
Perfect.
Chair Goldman?
Yeah.
Just a question to help me evaluate going further. The agenda shows public has opportunity to address the council at the end of the meeting.
Yes.
Is that specifically only for matters that we had prior discussed, or is that open the floor for them to? In other words, if we started at 4 or 5 and they couldn't make it, they could address the board
they
at
could.
The end. Okay, thank you.
They could.
Thank you. That's yeah, all I needed
there's
to know.
No, there's
you.
No reason why they couldn't. So we decided, took the discretion then to shift the agenda around. So we're going to discuss Gallagher's presentation regarding risk management review of the airport and possible changes in insurance coverage. And looks like, Ken, you're requesting approval to retain A.J. Gallagher as our insurance broker and risk management. Is that correct?
I modified the request just a little bit because we don't really have a proposal from them.
Okay.
So what I really want to do to introduce this item is that we already asked them to do a risk management review. There's no cost for that. What they did is they came in, they looked at our agreements, they looked at our permits. There's some permits that we're trying to get, you know, drafted to handle some businesses. For example, we had a company come on the airport in the fall to do snow removal. So we wanted to make sure that they're properly insured, they're licensed, all those good things. And so I drafted a permit for that use. But going forward, I think all these issues need to be identified and discussed. And so I had some work relationship with A.J. Gallagher when I was at the Reno Tahoe Airport. They are have a partnership relationship with Reno Tahoe where they review all their insurance coverages. They broker them. And many of their fees are covered through the commissions of the products that they out procure. And then in some cases, if those commissions aren't sufficient, then there's a retainer relationship with the organization. I would like them to be able to speak on those pieces, but I think that one of the my conversations with them, it started out when one of our fixed-based operators came to me and said they were unable to get the insurance coverage that we had requested. And these are old limits, like commercial general liability of like $2 million. So I found that kind of hard to believe. And I said, after a couple of reiterations of this, I asked them, I said, hey, I've got a recommendation for you. Will you contact these people, A.J. Gallagher, Katrina Pagan in particular, and let her shop that for you? And she came back with, oh, yeah, I can get that for you, no problem. So that's how this conversation with them started. And so I asked them to take a look at our other coverages and policies. And while this went on, we lost our tractor. And during that loss, we determined that there was not comprehensive coverage on that piece of equipment. Now, granted, it may not have really netted us a whole lot in the end. But to me, that was a weakness that was identified. Since we have, I've been on board, the fence, a perimeter fence around the airport has been run into three times.
Does that include where it's damaged, right?
Yes, that's correct. And so it seems to be like a draw magnet that if you're driving down that road, at some point somebody's going to hit it. And so far, we've been able to recover those costs through the coverage of the people driving the vehicle. However, if there's a hit and run and we can't catch anybody, then you know that liability is going to come back to us. So are we adequately covered for that? If somebody drives through our gate and it's after hours and we don't know about it, do we have sufficient coverage so we're not out of pocket for quote unquote being self-insured on that issue? But I don't want to belabor too much. I did give you a board memo outlining their background, their experiences. They can talk directly to you to the board about some of the issues that they've identified. But I think this fits right in line with our strategic plan. That's originally why I had this after the strategic plan discussion was because one of the things we have in there is about the security of the airport and the safe, maintaining a safe environment. And so I think being properly covered, properly insured, asking our tenants to have the proper insurance are things that we as an organization need to have identified. So with that, tomorrow I'd like to introduce. I believe we have four people on the line.
Somebody on the line has already given us kind of an estimate of what to expect. But, some are good, some are not so good.
Each other.
So the ones that were
You can talk to them. Hello? We're back.
Hello. Is this Katrina and crew?
Yeah, we're all here, Ken.
Okay, good. Okay, we have the board of the Airport Authority board members here, and I've just given them a basic discussion regarding the board member that I put together and your presentation. So if you guys would introduce yourselves to the chairman of the Airport Authority, Michael Golden, and the other members are here, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Ken. Hello, everyone. My name is Katrina Pagan, and I'm a senior account manager with the Gallagher Aviation Team based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I've been with Gallagher for a little over 2 years now, and prior to joining the aviation practice, I was a general aviation underwriter for 10 years, specializing in international as well as U.S. reps. I'd like to first begin by providing some information regarding our practice. Gallagher Aviation is a specialty division of Arthur J. Gallagher & Company and is one of the leading and largest aviation insurance brokerage and risk management firms in the United States as well as London. Our lineage includes the acquisition of aviation insurance services in 2011, which at that time was one of the largest privately held aviation insurance brokers in the U.S., followed by Mayfair in February of 2015, and most recently, JLC Aerospace this past June. Today, our team of staff serve as 300 dedicated aviation insurance professionals, some of who are pilots themselves, some are operators or military personnel. We've got 12 domestic offices, including our headquarters, which is in Las Vegas, Nevada, and our clients cover the spectrum of aviation. Our team members have extensive experience in all areas of aviation insurance, as well as property and casualty insurance disciplines, specifically tailored to the industry.
Katrina, I apologize to interrupt you. The speaker in here is having a hard time picking you up. Can you slow down just a little bit?
Yes,
I apologize for
interrupting. I'll bet you she's using a cell phone is really what's going on there.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's probably the issue.
Go ahead, Katrina. I apologize for interrupting.
Okay. Gallagher Aviation places more airport liability insurance operations than any other broker in the world. Our airport portfolio includes over 370 airport clients ranging from helipads and or heliport facilities, large, medium, and small hub airports to small municipal and private operations, including but not limited to Denver International, Ted Stevens Anchorage International, San Jose International, Reno Tahoe International, Albuquerque Sunport, and Landport St. Louis International, to name a few. Our capabilities. We have the ability to access a legion of insurance companies from our Western Region office, either directly or through our affiliates. We have access to worldwide marketplace, including the use of wholesalers, whenever it is in the best interest of our clients without any internal corporate restrictions or bias. We enjoy strong relationships with insurance companies throughout the world and have dedicated national as well as local liaisons that are responsible for fostering the relationships at the most senior levels of the companies we deal with, which enables us to influence our position on behalf of Carson City Airport to achieve the most favorable coverage terms and pricing. With that said, I will now move on to the review and recommendation portions of this discussion. My team and I review.
Yeah, I thought we were going to all introduce ourselves. Was that not what you wanted?
Well, I was going to cover just a quick review of the airport liability, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ryan so he can introduce himself.
Perfect.
Okay, great. My team and I reviewed the city's current airport liability policy issued by Global Aerospace, which, by the way, is an industry leader, notably with respect to claims handling, and we would recommend increasing the current limit on the existing policy from $10 million to either $25 million or $50 million to ensure that the airport has adequate coverage as respect to third-party bodily injury or property damage. Over the past 12 months alone, we have seen record-breaking settlements and jury awards, which in part have contributed to the market transitioning to hard, and as a result, we've seen significant rate increases, of which we expect to continue through next year. Our plan for the renewal would be to conduct a complete marketing exercise, which entails approaching all available markets to ensure that the city's insurance program includes comprehensive coverages and adequate limits at the best price available. This concludes my review of the aviation-related insurances, and at this time I will turn your attention over to my colleague, Ryan Jock.
Thank you, Katrina. Hello, everyone. Ryan Jocks, Arthur J. Gallagher, Public Sector Division. I work under the executive leadership of Susan Blankenberg, who's also on the line. I just want to preface that thank you for this opportunity to, you know, do a cursory review of the current insurance policies that the authority maintains. Without assessing the overall risk exposure and inquiring with some discovery questions, we're just going solely based on the coverage that you currently carry, making recommendations as respects to limits, and also identifying some key coverages that the authority may wish to consider to look at insuring. So with that, you know, the first insurance placement seems adequate. However, the property policy is currently appears to only be scheduling, you know, so the weather radio, light beacon, and tower and fences for a value of $85,000. Without knowing if there's any other property owned by the authority or on site, that may be something that, you know, we need to look into. The policy could also be expanded to include any owned property, potentially provide coverage for, you know, what's typically called contractor's equipment. So if you owned a tractor or any equipment, heavy equipment, you could schedule it under the current inland marine property policy that you have. So again, you know, it's recommended that the authority review and assess and determine, you know, if there are any assets that would need to be insured for property coverage. Also, I didn't see any coverage for mechanical breakdown coverage. If there's any equipment that's owned, that could be, you know, whether or not the authority has a boiler, you know, on site, or, you know, the HVAC system. There is a policy that would cover any breakdown of those that type of equipment. The workers' compensation policy, it looks like you were in a group purchase, you know, and I didn't really get much detail other than the declaration page that showed that the authority has statutory limits. So there really wasn't any recommendation on the work comp. There was one employee bond, which seemed to be in order, and without knowing, you know, there is public official liability that could cover the public officials for any act or omission, so I'm not aware if the bond is a requirement for certain individuals or just the one individual. And moving on to the commercial auto policy, the liability limit seems pretty low. We'd recommend securing at least a limit of $1 million each accident for auto liability and uninsured motorists, and the current liability limit is pretty low at $25,000 per person, $50,000 per accident for bodily injury. And there's only one vehicle, so, you know, that would lead me to question, does the authority have other vehicles owned? And if so, how are, you know, what are they covered under, or are they covered? Additional coverages, you know, key coverage placements and kind of benchmarking to other airport authorities would be, like I said before, public official liability. That would cover, you know, the board for any wrongful act, error, or omission while performing their duties. Law enforcement liability, again, to cover any bodily injury, personal injury, or property damage caused by a wrongful act for any of the law enforcement activities, if any. EMT professional liability, and going back to property, flood, earth movement, earthquake and flood for any of the owned property. There's also an airport that I work with that they tend to want to insure the runways for earthquake coverage in the event, you know, they become damaged because of an event. Crime and employee dishonesty is not a coverage that I see that the authority is carrying, as well as cyber liability and terrorism. There was an additional coverage that's really important would be environmental liability. I didn't see that the authority carried any environmental coverage, and that would cover whether you have any above-ground tanks, underground storage tanks, any environmental issues that arise out of the use or ownership of the airport. So whether or not you're doing, you know, de-icing and that ice runs off and, you know, causes an environmental condition, that could be a coverage, that's a key coverage that we would recommend looking into. So overall, while that's just a general assessment of the current policies, again, without going into a deep risk assessment, that would be our initial overview of the current coverage. So with that, if there are no questions, I can introduce Susan Blankenberg.
Do we want to stop for a second? Do you have any questions, or we've got a lot of information to digest and we should wait?
I have a couple questions. This is Linda Law, one of the members of the authority. In Ryan's comments, he was talking about international airports, and we certainly are not that. But I am curious, when he was talking about our vehicle coverage, that we have the statutory coverage that was required, and he was saying he thought that it should go up to $1 million per incident. I don't see that as an issue for us. I think 100 and 300 would probably be way more than we would need, but I'm concerned that the comments that were made are kind of blanket comments that are made at the international airport level rather than at the general aviation level that we are dealing with. Ryan, would you mind commenting on that?
Sure. You know, in reviewing the auto policy, it looked like there was only one vehicle and one driver rated. So, again, not knowing with who that individual is, you know, it looks like it's a pretty old GMC Sierra truck. You know, it could certainly be, I would agree with you, a minimum of 100, 300 for the auto liability, depending on what that auto is used for. You know, is it strictly on site or is it going off site? Your assessment as respects to my experience with other larger airports or international airports is accurate. You know, again, this is just a recommendation of, you know, if Gallagher were to be assist you with kind of assessing your overall risk, there would be some discovery questions to really drill down on exactly what the exposures are and ensuring that, you know, the appropriate, you know, policies are in place or you know, coverages are discussed at that time.
Yes. And if I can jump in, this is Susan. And I'll introduce myself first. Susan Blankenberg, and I'm the Executive Vice President out of the Gallagher San Francisco office, and I'm in charge of all the public entity business for the Bay Area. I do business places other than the Bay Area too, but I do tend to have a handful of airports. San Jose is then connected with a client that I work with Katrina and Brad on, as well as some other very small ones. But what we really do, regardless of what your size is, and I would say if you were an international airport, we would be recommending well in excess of $1 million. But even for our smallest commercial, you know, little local agencies and businesses, we are recommending $1 million worth of auto liability, because within that million, that includes the bodily injury and property damage for anything that you may hit. So when anyone's behind that wheel, not necessarily, you know, what's going to happen to your vehicle, but literally you're driving on an airport where people have a lot of expensive toys and may have a decent amount of money. So while you may think that that's more than what you need, just based off of a lot of the accidents that we've seen in litigation in California in general, 100, 300 is fairly low.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I will go ahead. One of the things that I was asked to do when we had our first call with Ken, and this is after the policies were reviewed that Ryan has just discussed with you, is he asked us to take a look at a handful of agreements that you have. So what we did is we took a look at some sample agreements, some permits and waivers, because it's our opinion that there are a couple of different ways that you can make yourself the best possible risk. And one is buy insurance so that if anything bad ever happens, you know you have that financial transfer that can make you whole and you can go on without any interruption in your business. For airports, another real critical piece is the contracts that you enter into. So we not only help our clients with the insurance piece, but I think what's equally as important, if not more important, is making sure that these contracts with third parties are right. So making sure that you're literally transferring as much of that liability over to the third party as you can. So I believe that there are some handouts that will walk you through just some basic observations we had of the review of five agreements. And then what we did is we put together a template, and each of your agreements would be set up a little bit different. But we went through the core parts of coverage that you could actually pick from depending on what the scope of work is, and we updated all of those for you. So what we would love the opportunity to do in going forward with a relationship with you is actually sit down and go through some of those contracts that you have with the third parties that are on the airport and make sure that they actually are carrying all of the coverages that most of our other airport clients are asking of their third parties. And we feel that this is a real important way to also help protect you, because it's unfortunate. Something bad could happen on an airport. Someone could get hurt. Someone's expensive property could get damaged. And if nobody has the right insurance, it's very unfortunate, but the odds are the claim is going to wind up on your doorstep. And whether you have any liability or not, sometimes you'll wind up finding that you need to spend a little money in defense just to prove and defend yourself and say that we really weren't liable after all. So we feel that that's a pretty critical piece of what we do as well. And very rarely are we not able to go in and take a look at agreements and make your operation just a little bit more safe. And that really, I believe, is the final piece that closes the circle as far as what we offer.
And, you know, Susan, this is Katrina. I just want to touch on something, you know, in relation to what you were just talking about. Some time ago, one of your tenants came to us to seek insurance because they were having a difficult time obtaining coverage from other carriers. And this specific tenant is working on third-party aircraft within their hangar, and although we, you know, pushed and advised them that it would be in their best interest to purchase products and completed operations coverage to protect them from being liable, you know, just as to the work that they were doing, their response was that it was not required by the airport, so they didn't want to purchase it. And our concern is, you know, if that tenant is working on someone's aircraft and there's substantial damage to that aircraft and they go and they submit a claim and it's determined that that tenant does not have insurance, that client's insurance company or the client themselves could, you know, name the airport in the suit to try and, you know, reclaim some of the damages.
Thank you, Katrina. I made mention of that, but not the part about them not adding additional coverages or limits. What we talked about before you guys were on the line was that we were going to ask the board that we come back and get a partnership proposal from A.J. Gallagher so that we can look and see what that looks like at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. But judging from Ryan's conversation or comments or yours and Susan's, should we do a deeper dive into some of these uses of equipment, or would the partnership proposal be after that, or would that be before those type of conversations?
Well, I think in order for us to put, you know, something together that, you know, is worth taking a look at, it would probably be in our best interest to maybe dive in a little bit further just to discuss, you know, those additional equipment items that Ryan notated. Maybe review some of your current lease agreements with your tenants, as Susan suggested, just so we can, you know, kind of point out, you know, this could be a scenario that could turn into something. I can give you some examples of some incidents where we had one airport authority where they did not own the property, which I believe is a similar. They did not own the building, but they were leasing the property to a tenant, and the hangar collapsed due to an excessive amount or a record-breaking amount of snowfall that collected on the roof, and there were aircraft that were inside of that hangar. And although the airport authority, you know, did not own the building itself, they leased the property, so they were ultimately, you know, named in the suit. The insurance company needed to go and defend them, and it resulted in a substantial amount of defense costs just to prove that the airport authority was not liable. We also had another instance, and this would pertain to your tenants that are refusing to purchase aircraft hull insurance coverage for their aircraft. We had an instance where a hangar door collapsed on an aircraft while it was exiting the airport, the hangar facility, and the owner of the aircraft did not have any hull coverage for the aircraft. So when they were, you know, more or less left without an aircraft and no insurance to, you know, repair or replace that aircraft, they sought damages from the airport authority because they were blaming the hangar door collapsing on the airport authority, even though the airport authority had nothing to do with the hangar itself. So these are just some scenarios as to why we think it's important to really, you know, review your current lease agreements, maybe add some additional requirements so that we can pass, you know, the liability or push it back onto the tenants to ensure that they are operating, that they have operating, you know, carefully, they have adequate coverage. If they are, you know, servicing other aircraft, or if they're even storing other aircraft within their hangar, you know, we'll want to make sure that they have adequate hangar keepers coverage to provide insurance for those aircraft as well.
So I believe that was a yes. We do believe that it would be beneficial to spend a little bit more time together discussing a little bit more about what your exposure is, to see if some of the examples that Ryan gave would actually be areas that we would like to see different coverages for you, and which you're already doing fine on. And as far as reviewing the agreements, yeah, we'd love to take a look at a few more, because the more you can put in writing, at least you're standing on stronger legs as respects intent. And no one today can assure you that just because you really are not liable that you may not have to spend some money on defense. But we will certainly do our darn best to make sure that you've got the strongest agreements by your side.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. We appreciate it, and I guess, Ken, you'll be in touch with them.
Ladies, Ryan, thank you very much for your time. I think that my takeaway from this is to limit the airport's exposure to risk in a risky business, which is an airport and aviation. And if we're inadequately covered, that exposes us to great liability. And so if we can ensure that people utilizing our airport, based on our airport, are adequately covered, then that will transfer some of the risk from the airport to the individual users. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, and I will be in touch with you tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Are they offline? Tomorrow? Okay. I'd like to, while they're offline, I want to point out a few things, and I'm sure other members of the authority want to say a few things too. Number one, this is a public entity. As such, we have a fiduciary obligation to the taxpayer to receive bids. I'm not real comfortable just giving this company any business. They're in the business of selling insurance, but we're going to have to receive bids from others. We can't sole source something like this. That's issue number one. But number two is I'm really uncomfortable with everything I heard coming out of these folks. Tenants who have long-term leases with limits outlined in their leases, we can't do anything about that.
That's not true, because the leases say that the insurance coverages can be adjusted for time and condition. So in other words, if you signed a lease in 1980 and the times have changed, you're not stuck with the limits that are in there. I've read through
those. Some are not. Our lease is not. Okay? I don't have to increase our insurance one dime if I don't want to, but we carry more than what we're required. What concerns me is when I see things like $5 million in hangar keeper's liability, because I went through this as a business owner. And we could not get the hangar keeper's liability that was requested by one of our airports. We couldn't get it at all. The product line wasn't available. And the question came up from the insurance carrier, where's your exposure? And they wanted to know what the dollar value was of the exposure. We outlined it for them. They pushed back right on the airport and said, we're not going to write any policy for that amount of money because the exposure doesn't exist. And so when I see an insurance agent who's in the business of selling insurance, that's how they make their money, trying to push coverage on the tenants of the airport through the airport authority, I'm very uncomfortable with that kind of a scenario, because the numbers I'm seeing here, based on my experience, which is more than anybody else around, the numbers are unreasonable. They are absurdly unreasonable in many cases. I will tell you something else. They talked about litigation. The airport authority can be sued for anything. A number of years ago, my company operated an FBO at an airport in northwestern California. A year and a half before we took over that FBO, a Pilatus PC-12 had crashed in Montana. All 12 people aboard were killed. Now, the aircraft doesn't have the capacity to carry 12 people, but all 12 were killed. Keep in mind the time frame, a year and a half before we ever set foot at this airport. The aircraft had bought fuel from the airport a year and a half before we were ever there. We were sued for that. So was the airport. The airport had nothing to do with it. If they want to sue, they're going to sue. And no amount of insurance and no coverage can assist you, no matter what. If they're going to sue, they're going to sue. Those are my comments. I'll entertain any other comments from members of the authority.
This is Member Harris. Just to add, and this is more, these are more process thoughts than anything else. One is, I think we're all at a little bit of a disadvantage tonight because our legal counsel isn't here, and when they start talking about contracts and some of these other areas, it'd be great to have our advisor. So obviously this will be a better topic for another night when they get into those kind of areas. The other thing, I think, because ultimately this the property and everything goes back to the city, and that we're operating under an agreement, this is probably a conversation we also want to have with somebody at the city that is in the risk management area. And it could be that they'll come forward and say, oh my gosh, we had no idea there are these kinds of risks. Or they could also say, you know, this is the kind of stuff that you have to be comfortable with and if you're running a city. So I'd love to get their thoughts on this to start with. So those are just two areas that I wanted to make sure we touched on.
In looking at this, it looks like we're going to try and do a global view of where we are and where we might go. And with the information here, I couldn't really see much of anything of where are we now. A column that, what are some of the other opportunities? What is this? Is this going from what, 2 million to 5 million? Where are we? So I think really if we're going to be evaluating this, we need to have some kind of a basic look of where we are now and what some of the other risks are as we go ahead, just to be able to understand where we're at here. Because right now it's pretty murky. So before we get going or do anything, I'd like to see some kind of a where we are now, what are some of the other things? Are we, how much insurance do we really need and where are we?
This is Linda Law. One of the things that's on the documentation that we got from Gallagher is the mobile food truck permit. It says should also require auto liability at $1 million. The state doesn't even require that for the food truck that, for instance, that we used for the ball game up at the college. They require $1 million public liability, but the state doesn't tell them what kind of automobile liability insurance they ought to have. It's the general liability insurance. So I think some of the terminology in here to me is a little bit different than it should be, and I'm certainly no insurance guru, but I agree that a matrix that says what we have now and what they are proposing would be most helpful for our consideration. Thank you.
I'm going to piggyback on what some of you have said. I am particularly in the league with Bradley regarding bringing Cecilia, who is our risk manager, into this process. The city owns the ground under the airport, and the city has to be part of this situation. I also was woefully unimpressed with the lady from Las Vegas. The lady from San Francisco was much more to the point, and the lady from Las Vegas should go back to school.
Ken, I'm trying to understand the relationship that Gallagher would provide. It looks like they come in, and I'm just trying to explain what I think I understand their responsibility is and looking for confirmation or clarification from you. So Gallagher would come in and assess our risk in various areas and then shop for insurance for us. Is that the relationship that they provide?
Ultimately, I think that is exactly how that shakes out. The independent review of our agreements and the limits and coverages is something that hasn't been done. There's a point in Title 19 where it mentions the airport authority being able to adjust coverages and limits as time allows. What I mean by that is changes in conditions and operating environments. For example, Chair Golden mentioned, there's coverages that were written in the leases that were very old. But I think the city code, and I don't have agreement in front of me where we can see whether or not it says that these coverages may change from time to time. But that's similar language that's in that. But ideally, the biggest piece of this is that the airport authority, in order to meet this strategic goal of maintaining financial stability, is to ensure that we don't get caught short in a coverage situation where we have some exposure to risk and it's not limited or we're underinsured. Now, take auto insurance, for example. The $1 million commercial auto coverage is almost a standard from anything that I've seen in my experience on the airports at Reno. And when we invited the food truck vendors to show up here at the open house, that was the request I made of them. They pulled those out. It wasn't a problem. Oh, yeah, I'll get that right to you. It doesn't take long for $1 million in damages to add up. We had a similar discussion with an aircraft maintenance guy in the airport where he balked at a requirement for $2 million commercial liability. And, it was quickly identified that, hey, if you're moving around this $1 million airplane and you prang the side of another airplane, you're there. And so those coverages are set for a purpose. Now, Gallagher could come back and recommend to us that we have a certain level. And we as an organization may say, that seems a little steep. We don't analyze our risk that way, or we're willing to assume that. But what I think we need is a look to see, hey, what's the marketplace look like? And that's what they've done. We have $10 million commercial or aviation liability. If two guys ball it up at the middle of the runway, that $10 million is going to seem not very high. It's going to seem underinsured at some point. If we have a flood on the airport that wipes out the end of runway 9er, it's going to cost way more perhaps than $10 million to rebuild that. I mean, I don't know what that looks like at this point. I mean, you could probably build a new runway for the 75 feet and wide and 2,000 feet long. You can probably build it for that. But my point being is that I think as a part of my responsibility is to look at where the airport has risk and try to minimize it. The purpose of bringing this forward and having them look at this was to get that conversation started. And okay. So, yes, we do need to look at what coverages we currently have. Yes, we need to come back, and that's what that proposal would look like. As far as I know, there wasn't an RFP for any of the current insurance coverages we have, whether it was through USI or I think it's called Progressive for our auto and Deans and Homer for the other. I found no evidence of any RFP out for coverage.
Again, that's probably why you need to speak with the city.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We haven't purchased anything. All we're doing is we're saying, hey, look, what would this look like? And this is a group I have familiarity with, so I felt comfortable in saying, come in here and take a look and give me some guidance. So the purpose of that, this on the agenda is for that reason. So I just want to say that I think we should take the next step, get some looks at it. We'll have that conversation with the airport council, what his recommendation is as far as whether we go out to an RFP for this kind of service or whatnot. But I just want to make those comments.
I think those are in line, and I think bringing in the city with their risk management people is probably, if we start with that matrix, bring in the city, have them look at it, and I think everything on here is worth talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's the issue. I think that until we get a quantification of where we are now, what gaps we have and what we may need to go to at some point, some level, in whether it's the rates that are on here or not, I think that's the thing that we have to get a handle on before we start making decisions about placement.
Okay. John?
Yeah, I'd say ditto to that, but I'm curious. Have you assessed all our policies, how old they are, who we have them with, And did you talk with any of them before doing this? I mean, I'm not critical.
No, I didn't ask them why they gave us a certain limit. We just reapply every year for our global aviation insurance, and I did that. And I think the only addition we made to that this year was we added the terrorism coverage for 10% of what our policy was. It was like $400.
Also, I think that this points out the part of the problem with not having anybody on this authority who has been here for two or three terms, because there's no institutional memory.
Right. No, absolutely. And your point about the city owning the land is well taken. I mean, they're probably self-insured, is my guess. And
guessing you're right on
that. Yeah, and so that That's definitely a coverage or a conversation we need to have, especially in the cooperative agreement. That might be something we have to entertain as we move forward on that. But what this does is it opens up that discussion. And
I'm not being critical.
No, I understand. I think that was that goal has been accomplished. We all have more questions before we even started this conversation. So I think that's a good spot.
Okay, I want to wrap this up. If anyone else has any comments, if not, we're going to take a 5-minute break. Okay, and we're going to be adjourned until 7:15 on that clock. There, recess. Sorry, recessed until 7:15 on that clock. And when we come back, I'm going to give the gavel to Bradley, let him handle the next agenda item. Okay, it's about 17 minutes after 7. I'm going to call the meeting back into order. And I've asked Vice Chair Harris to take over the gavel and run this particular item. And this is the discussion regarding the strategic plan. We went out of order here, but presenting an annual work plan for Carson City Airport, Vice Chair Harris really has more experience in this particular topic than I do. So, Bradley, it is all yours, and also I'll state Linda Ritter is here to help guide us through this discussion or add to it.
All right, let me just clarify that we're talking now under item G2, the discussion and possible action presentation of draft annual work plan for Carson City Airport Authority. And our airport manager will take us through a presentation on this, I believe.
Thank you, Vice Chair Harris. Without going into too much background on this, we all know how we got to this point. What we will do once we've completed this item for the evening is incorporate any findings or recommendations from the board into the final annual work plan, into the 5-year implementation plan, and if there's any metrics we want to change. And then we'll end up with our final document. So the goal here is to really set the stage for where we're going in the next for the rest of the fiscal year. I would say the next year, but we're 6 weeks into the fiscal year, 7, and so we got the next 10 months or so to look forward to. And so as our earlier discussions highlighted, there were some things in particular that we wanted to look at strategic goal-wise, and under infrastructure, we identified the weakness in we don't really have a capital improvement program. Now, we have the FAA grant program for the infrastructure of the airport, but maintaining equipment, replacing equipment like the tractor, it brings up a great example. The whatever year GMC truck that we have and the snowplow that we inherited from NDOT, all long in the tooth, all going to need some future replacement. And so I think it's critical that we look at that. And I met with the treasurer this week, and we had a discussion about that. Let me see if I can get that a little bigger. So we're going to work together on that. There's input from the rest of the board. Please feel free. One of the things I think that we need to ensure is we get if we're going to get new equipment, we need to get it out of the weather and have a place that can be worked on out of the elements. The second thing was the safety and security piece, and the biggest item that's been highlighted under that is the board's initiative for the nighttime feasibility study. And so I think that we just received the technical report. I sent that out. During my manager's report tonight, I have a couple of simulation videos I want to share with you that will shed some light on where we're at in this now and how we're proceeding forward. Under economic activity, obviously we think this is the conversations I've had with board members and even during my hiring process, this is one of the big components of our goals for the next year is to work on economic development. I had a long chat with Mr. Giangreco today and over the last couple weeks. He has sold an additional hangar, so he's currently had a certificate of occupancy for 6 weeks, and he has sold 33% of his product. And so, granted, he would like to have 100% sold, but I think that there is some evidence that there is market demand on the airport. We've also sold two other T-hangers I'm aware of that are on the airport, and that's just taken place in the last 30 days or so. I do get a lot of inquiries, but a lot of those inquiries are for smaller recreational-type aircraft, 172s, 182s, Kit Foxes, Piper Cubs. We know that there's not a great market for that as far as whether it's tax revenue, fuel flowage fee. We don't get hangar rents, so those are the other type of revenues we would generate from those type of aircraft. I do know that there's another hangar that has come available, and the guy who rented it is looking to add another jet to the airport fleet. So with that discussion, economic activity, we have another board item coming up about the JetNet software suite that I'll be discussing later. But the master planning process, the strategic plan, the economic development study, all these kind of feed into this item of economic activity. And I think that that's where a lot of our energies need to be directed. As part of that conversation, we're discussing with the city about the cooperative agreement, and we've had a conversation with Steve Takas, and I have had a conversation with the legal counsel for the Reno Airport, trying to talk about the differences of land and how they market it and why that they're exempt from the NRS statute that we fall under. And a lot of it has to do is because they own the land on the airport, where currently the city owns the land. So in this whole discussion about whether the cooperative agreement, we transfer the land to the airport authority as it was originally discussed, may give us some opportunity to be able to expedite marketing of our vacant property. Also, another process that we're looking at would be working with the city planning department about an expeditious permit fee. So if we get a company that comes in here, they're ready to lease, that we can get them moving in an expeditious manner so they don't start saying, hey, this is taking too long, we're going to go elsewhere with our business. So there's a concern about that and being able to be efficient in that. The community relationships, we discussed looking at possibility of adding an additional fly-in event or maybe even an airport fun run and that sort of thing to build community relationships and get additional traffic here, bring the food truck out for a fly-in, we don't have a restaurant. Maybe that's a way to mitigate having an on-field restaurant for now. But we think that's a possibility as well. Promote aviation. You just saw, I'll mention in my manager's report, a EAA event that was just held recently that was a weekend-long event. We have the NDAA tomorrow is holding a dinner in our terminal building. So that's another way to promote the airport. CACS Air Force can bring a couple warbirds out for display. People can go out and have a picture taken with them. You know, I think it's an additional way to get people in, see the changes that we've done in the terminal, and promote aviation within that business group. Financial stability, goes back to the economic impact with the gross and base aircraft. Interesting enough, I reviewed, I did a cursory review of our tax revenue for this year. They've only listed 106 airplanes that have paid tax. According to base aircraft, we got over 300. So there needs to be a little bit of work on that. So that's a bucket where some of the revenue might be leaking out. It's currently not codified about how airport receiving the property taxes. I had a discussion with the assessor this week about what that formula looks like. Nobody can find the original agreement. There was a board memo, board of supervisors memo in '92 that mentioned transferring the city's share of that. I don't think the land is included, especially in the through-the-fence properties, so that might be an opportunity for additional tax revenue for the airport authority. And the acreage to the east of the airport is certainly not, we're not getting any revenue, even though they have deeded airport access. So there's a question about how we can maybe address some of that going forward. The capital equipment fund, I talked a little bit earlier. And then administratively, this is where we can clean our side of the house a little bit. We've had some discussions with some potential people buying property on that vacant land that has through the fence access. And that really exposed to us how we don't have necessarily a great leasing policy in place or through the fence access policy. There's some stuff, obviously, in Title 19. A lot of that is dated. So there's some things that we can do to improve that. Minimum standards for businesses. You know, if somebody's coming out of the airfield and says they're going to open a flight school and they want to teach IFR flight, but they don't have the proper facility for it, or they don't have the proper aircraft for that proposal. You know, if we identify that minimum standards, that's a best practice for us. So the annual work plan, I think, has got a lot on it. One of the things that Member Harris has talked to me about is not taking too big of a bite of the apple. So I started with this as a conversation point. So I want to turn this back over before we even get anywhere near the five-year implementation plan. Linda Reeve has and I have discussed this, and if you have any questions for her, I'm sure she's happy to respond to that as well. So that concludes my presentation on the annual work plan.
Thank you. I just want to point out that we were talking about the initiatives here, and then next door to that we have the work plan, which details a little bit in terms of what the expectation, what the work would look like when it comes back. And I expect that will be fleshed out a bit more as we, you know, as we work on this, particularly in terms of the timing, because, you know, if you come in 11 months and you have it all done on the same day, it may not be what we want. So so some planning around that would, in terms of you know, this is work that's going to be done for the rest of the year. What's going to come first? And those are the kinds of questions that you do this before you do this, because there's sort of a project flow to this, okay? And so to be able to see a bit more of that, I think in some cases it's fairly clear that one piece is kind of come before the other, but just being able to dial that in a bit, you know, that's just a comment that I think there's a little bit more to do there in terms of the work plan side of things. But in terms of these priorities, any comments or questions on the on what our manager's proposing for 2019 to the 2019-2020 fiscal year? Yes, Linda.
This is Linda Law. When you transit from the initiative and strategic goal document over to the five-year implementation schedule, I think it's really ambitious, but I don't necessarily think it all has to happen at once either. If you look at the level three priorities compared to the level two and level one, it, of course, on ours it didn't come out in color, but I think that having looked at it online, and there's not a lot there that I would necessarily argue with, and as I told the members a month or two ago, I am more than happy to work with Ken once I'm off the board to make sure that the operations manuals and that sort of thing get tidied up and so forth. And I think the comments that you made a while ago about the best practices and that sort of thing should be integrated into those when we do it. And, you know, I again reiterate, I am not going to just get off the board and run away. I think I want to stay involved in some of this, and if there's any way that I can help in having these things come through to fruition, I'm more than happy to do that.
October 2nd, I think, we're starting.
Ken, thank you for this presentation. I really appreciate how things kind of tie together here. There are a few missing links for me specifically, though. Yeah, I'm looking at the work plan, how that carries over to the implementation schedule, the 5-year, very well outlined, you know, year one, year two, et cetera, it's fairly clear, and then the performance measures. But what I'm kind of missing here is, what are our targets? How do we know we succeeded? So I'm wondering if you can comment on that.
Yeah, let me thank you for that, that question. If you go to page 3 in your handout, you pull that up on the board. We have a, I'm sorry, that's page 6 has a chart of performance, but page 3 has, these are the initiatives, I'm sorry. The chart of performance, these are some of the measures that we have identified, Linda and I. I'm sorry, I told you 3 at first. Go to page 6, please. That's the one that's up on the screen right now. These are performance measures that we, Linda and I, have talked about as a way to identify changes in activity. So if we look at the maintenance of or maintaining airport infrastructure in top condition, one of the measures would be complaints from either tenants or users about the infrastructure, or if we have an annual inspection we get with NDOT, if they identify deficiencies and that sort of thing. So we've identified budget items in our budget that go towards airfield maintenance and airfield equipment maintenance. So that's one of the measures that we came up with for seeing if we're on target. If you go down to the economic activity, we don't really do hangar leases per se, but if we're working with our hangar owners on the airfield, and we're trying to help them market vacant hangars, know what's available and whatnot, a method of tracking this might be turnover or new tenants on the airfield. And so another way to identify that would be the number of new gate cards that we issue to new airport tenants. Airport operations, being able to count the traffic and being aware of what our traffic activity is. You know, at an uncontrolled airfield, that's a little bit more difficult.
If I may interrupt for just one brief moment, I had a comment on this particular section, and I read through it, in the handout that you sent me, and it may be the only comment I have in any of this about a revision. One of the metrics I use to determine economic activity is the fuel flow.
Fuel flow, yep.
I would suggest, but at your discretion, additionally adding the fuel flow to the economic activity metric.
And we can. And it's also at the very bottom where it says maintain financial stability.
Oh, no, I saw that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a great metric.
Because what I say is, okay, how much fuel did we sell? That's a metric directly correlated to airport activity.
That's one of the metrics that we changed in the manager's report when we were first talking about like traffic count, estimated count. I thought fuel flow is more objective and not subjective. You've either sold X number of gallons of Jet A or you haven't.
Yeah, and right. It's not perfect because right. If someone undercuts another on price.
Or tankers their fuel and it doesn't buy fuel, we don't count.
Right, and they tanker it in or, things of that nature.
Right.
But it is a good indicator.
No, absolutely.
Just saying.
Yeah, another good activity or measure is the property tax revenues. We use that in our budget, obviously. Our fund balances in our accounts, that sort of thing. So we see growing revenue. Like, for example, we have a proposal for an additional tower lease on the Beacon Tower for T-Mobile. So, that'll be a new lease agreement. So that's something that we can look at. So whenever if we're starting to direct market our land and we get that time of activity, those are our metrics that we're looking at for those sort of things. Relationships in the public, those sort of things, or we've used a different one. How do we estimate attendance at the open house? How many terminal meetings do we host? That sort of thing. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Thank you. For the record, Linda Ritter Consulting, and for Member Simmons, the question about targets. This page does not have targets. Normally, if you have performance measures, you absolutely will have targets. Our concern here was where was the data coming from, because I'm not sure that a lot of this data has been collected. Fuel flowage certainly has, so perhaps the you could assign some type of a target on there. But for the first year, we agreed, let's start gathering that data. I'm not sure what you have in historic data that's going to allow you to set trends and then select targets, because very often to set a target, you kind of have perhaps a little historic data to get there. But certainly having those targets that tell you whether you have achieved what you set out to achieve is another column that should be added in the next year, probably.
Yeah, Ms. Ritter, thank you very much for the clarification on that. Yes, that's what I was looking for, was where's the baseline? And from what I gather from this dialogue is that we're new at this, looking at metrics, so we don't have baseline data to compare, so we can't really set targets for the future. I would like to add, just while I got the mic, I don't see anything that's specifically referencing like revenue and expense. So I don't know in airport type areas what the typical metrics possibly would be. But for example, maybe like revenue per aircraft that occupies space in Carson City, or revenue per square foot that we provide. So I don't see any metrics like that that tie us to revenue and expense directly.
Well, the historic revenue sources that we have are from our operating budgets. So when we go into look at last year's fiscal year and we look at what budget was, look what actual revenues are, that can help us establish that baseline so that next year, if we grow any of those items, we'll be able to track the performance trend. So I think we've been doing that as a matter of course as a board, just through the financial tracking. But I think what this will really allow over the five-year period is year one, it'll really start the baseline for that. We could actually use last year's budget or actual figures as a starting point going forward. If we're not at least growing at the CPI rate, then we're not doing our job at all. So anything above that would show some sort of economic growth. But yes, we don't own the hangar, so that's hard to measure. We're not in the business of really leasing tie downs, so that's hard to measure. We're not in the business of selling fuel, but we have these where we can extract those numbers from other sources. So the airport component from the airport authority standpoint is really we're just the landowner for long-term ground leases, and anything we can move the needle on will be on new leases of existing vacant property.
I've done a few of these over the years, and I think this is a really great start. I mean, I'm hoping that this is a working document. I'm counting on Ken making it be a working document. Will there be changes to it going forward? Absolutely. As a starting point, I think it's top notch. I mean, I think that it's the work on identifying metrics is correct. I think the priorities are correct. I think that the presentation is easy to understand for for the public and for the board, and so I commend the work. And I think that it is an excellent starting point. It's not the end. It's not the end point, nor was it intended to be.
I've just got one place that I'd like to push back, and that is on the lack of targets. I understand that we don't have the data to be able to go back and say in previous years it was this, but I think despite having to wing it in a lot of places, this is how we'll communicate our priorities, our expectations to the manager. So, there's some areas where I can see the, how many new gate cards are we going to issue? I don't know. Maybe we just grab a number. But in some areas, I think, for example, the number of security breach reports received, that's an area where we can, is 25 okay? or is two okay, right? It's a way for us to communicate what do we think are the priorities. And if there is a security breach and, you know, there's a target in there that says that 25 is okay, you might jump on that a little slower than if we say two is. So it's a matter of setting priorities. The complaints received from users on safety issues is another one where I think we don't have to know what the number is. We know what the number we want to have. Of course, it's zero. So we're going to try and set a trend. We'll put a number in there that would be acceptable to us, for example. But I think there are ways to get to these numbers, and I really hate the idea of waiting a year to develop targets. So I just open that up for comments. I'll just add this. In my past life as an HR guy who put together these kinds of plans, if I'd gone to my board of directors and said, we'd like to wait a year to set targets, they would have thrown me out of the room.
That's right.
So, again, I think that we can find a way to set these targets. So that's what I'd like to do.
Are you throwing me out of the room?
No, I'm not throwing you out of the room.
Can I make a suggestion?
We'll throw Linda out.
Yeah, I'll
go. Maybe I make a suggestion because I like, Bradley's spot on. I'd toss his ass right out right there if he was working for me.
And it'd be the first time.
No, exactly. I have no reservations about showing people the door when the performance isn't there. Suggestion I have is do we have any other deficiencies in this report?
Right. What are we missing?
Okay, if that's all we're missing, my recommendation would be to have maybe yourself as vice chair and maybe another member of the airport authority, Linda.
Maybe not when we're meeting.
Yeah. Maybe the two of us sit down with Ken, develop that, and bring it back to the airport authority. Right. That just a suggestion.
That wouldn't stop us from accepting what we have.
No,
we could amend it.
No.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you.
No, our real goal here was to get feedback from the board and. Linda and I could have stuck arbitrary numbers in there, but that wasn't our point. But I do not see a full year of data, but I do see maybe we get a quarter under our belt and see if there's a trend already and we can revise it, or if it's two quarters, or we can pick an arbitrary number. I'm fine with any of that. But the most important piece is that me start knocking off these items as our priorities have identified, and that we can work on the metrics as we go forward. And I appreciate the board helping set that because I don't want to just throw out a number like I'm setting a line for a football game and then find out how far or close I'm off the line based upon some arbitrary figure. So, I think loud and clear the economic activity has got to be the one of the biggest pieces. Stability of finances is incredibly important. But having the right tools in place, updated policies, the manual, if I get hit by the proverbial bus, Linda doesn't have to run back in, or you don't have to run out and hire a new temporary manager, but we have a document there so that when somebody comes in, that those policies are outlined and it makes it a much more streamlined operation for everybody.
This is just a point of information you can. And I'm a little disturbed, although there's not a lot the airport can do about this, with the property tax receipts. That's really an assessor issue. But in fairness to the assessor, there are quite a few businesses on the airport that have aircraft. And I know for a fact, being an owner of one of those businesses with 8 aircraft, we do not pay Carson City. We pay State of Nevada Central Assessment.
Yes.
And then they distribute to all the different counties within the state where we operate. So Carson City, for example, would get something, but they're not going to get full fare on the property taxes because of the fact that we're a business operating in the state, and that's how the taxes work. So, you know, the Part 91 guys, if the aircraft's based here, that's one thing. But the business side, it's a different ball game when it comes to taxes.
But just to add the flip side of that, there are aircraft located elsewhere that we should be getting some taxes from too, right? I mean, it should sort of
that's correct.
Mix up. So that, we need to understand that.
Yeah, that is. I'm just saying it's point of information for you because I know from personal experience it goes through. It's called central assessment is the name of the department, and we have to report to them every one of our landings during the year in every county. So if we land in Washoe County, we have to tell them we were there this many times. You know, we go through our logbooks, literally, because we can be audited. Or, you know, Elko County gets a lot of money from us. Carson City gets a good chunk of change from us. Douglas County probably gets a little. Clark County gets some. All the counties end up getting something from us. But just because the aircraft is here doesn't mean that Carson City gets 100% of that take. It doesn't work that way.
No, I understood. Other comments?
Yeah, I find your comment regarding targets and yours as well interesting. I would be more concerned about this because I know you're right. This is the way to do things if you go by the way things are supposed to be done. But we don't have the data, and our manager has only been on for a year. So I'm thinking his suggestion about do a quarter and then project for the year and work from there is a good one, and it's sort of a compromise. And I also will say that in my view, it's just one view, but, and I think we all hold this to a greater or lesser degree, economic development is the primary thing because we can't do a lot about the property taxes. We can't do a lot about the rock sales. We can get the money, but it will eventually go away, et cetera. And gate cards aren't going to bring in a lot, et cetera. So economic development. So with that being said, my primary goal, which probably can't be done in a year, but can be done fairly quickly, is to get the nighttime light situation, because I think that's the biggest boost we can get to move down that road. But I don't want to put that on Ken as, oh, we have to have that be a time and a year goes by. Hopefully we will, but so that's my two cents.
One of the things that I think about this is, on the centrally assessed rolls, I know that the state collects that money and it gets parsed back to the counties. However, I'm not sure we've ever tracked what the city does, what Carson does with that money. That money is aviation money, and whether it stays in Carson City's general coffers or where, I've never seen it come back to us. And go ahead, Linda, if you know how that works, let us know.
For the record, Linda Ritter, because I have my past history was a lot in government finance. Centrally assessed property taxes go back to the county as a check, but it's not designated as to here's aviation, here's utilities, here's whatever those things are. Whether the state can give that to the county, that's certainly a question. And when you have your discussions with the county about the interlocal, that might be a good place to bring it up.
Well, that was my point. Yeah. That's one of the things that I think we ought to do some research on and figure out if there's a way to effectively draw that money from the county coffers as aviation related into our budget, into ours, just as we do the property tax.
I'd like to weigh in on this because I'm going to say lots of luck.
Yeah. I figured that would be it.
Once it's gone to the general fund, you might just say it's probably gone. But it is good to track it so we can make the argument.
Right.
And maybe use it as leverage.
I'm talking
with two hats here.
I think that's worthy effort to put forth. But that's not what we measure the performance of our manager on.
Yeah.
What we measure the performance of our manager on is bringing new business in. And that's what is in these metrics, and that's what we need to focus on. Yes, in addition to that, we need to do good diligence on making sure that we know how the money flows. But that's sort of cleaning up history. That doesn't address the future, which is where we want Ken to be spending his time, is on the future.
I agree with that, but I think that it's interesting. It would be an interesting thing to figure out exactly how much of that is generated. And it's the information is out there. And if we can bring in an extra $20,000 or $30,000 a year from the centrally assessed roles, that gives us the ability to, you know, have an adjunct for our budget into the future. And that's as good as bringing in new money.
And we have that thing we call the capital fund that we'd like to be able to put some money in, and that might make it a little easier to get there, too. So at this point, any more conversation, or does anybody want to make a motion? Go ahead.
I think we do have some metrics already, and a lot of this is based on economics and how we're doing. And I'm looking over here, and I see all kinds of numbers that we've had over the previous years. And I personally like to see something like that in a graphical form to see, you know, how all the stuff adds up, how that might be going up. So I think we do have some metrics already over the past couple of years. Maybe they weren't organized properly. But I think as far as a starting point, it's something we can look at. And if he gets, you know, if GDP is 3% and we get 6%, then we know we're making progress. And we can also assess what areas we have. So I think it might just be a matter of taking our profit and loss, year comparison or whatever, perhaps making that a little bit more visible and evident to all of us, maybe through some, you know, simple graphics. I think that would be a good starting point to measure how we're doing it, you know, expenses and profits.
All right, any public comment? Without public comment, no other comments. So we have kind of two things we talked about here. One is to approve what you brought to us, and the other is this question of targets. And I don't think we need a motion to look at targets and be able to talk about them at the next meeting. So, and I'd be happy to work with Ken to kind of kick
around some of those. I'm sorry. I'd be happy to work with Ken to kick around some of those target ideas and see what we could come up with between now and the next meeting. So I think we're back to the original point of this, which was to see if we want to approve this strategic plan and the five-year implementation schedule. Does anybody care to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so the motion is I move to approve the strategic plan, proposed work plan priorities and five-year implementation schedule beginning in fiscal year 2019 and 2020. So that's the motion, and we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
So can I ask a question?
You certainly may, sir.
What will be then the process to get those targets as, you know, implemented?
What I will do between now and the next meeting is work with Ken to propose some targets at the next meeting, and then we'll go through that job dropping process where people go, gee, that sounds unfair, or gee, that seems awfully generous, or whatever. But then we hope to at that point come to the targets for the fiscal year. All right.
And I'd like to propose that we just make that be part of the manager's report on a monthly basis. review of performance against targets. I can't imagine it operating any other way.
Well, that was our intent. Is now that each manager's report will identify the initiatives we're working on, what progress we've made, if any, and we can utilize this document here as kind of our working document. So that executive summary that you saw of the master plan that's in the board packet will be populated with that work plan, the implementation schedule, whatnot. And that's a work in progress. It should change because right now we're trying to predict the future and don't know if we have all the tools in place to accomplish or whether those metrics are solid or not. So that's the short end of the story. We'll have a 6-page working document essentially.
Very good. That becomes your agenda for your manager for the meetings,
yeah,
really.
Right.
I'm reserving the right to the next time that you bring forth a time-consuming project that isn't on the strategic plan priorities. I'm going to call you out on that during the meeting, so just so you know.
At this time, I'd like to turn the meeting back over to the chairman.
Thanks, Brett.
I'm very uncomfortable doing this.
I was very comfortable letting you handle it. Man, that was great.
I didn't have to. That was perfect.
I figured you're the look. This is what good management does. They surround themselves with those who have better skills than they, and they count on them. And we counted on Bradley to carry us through that matter. Thank you. Seriously, thank you. So, item number 4 on our agenda this evening, discussion and possible action regarding the approval of authorization for services from Kaufman Associates to obtained environmental categorical exclusion documentation for relocating the AWAS, proposed snow removal equipment, building, and runway 9027 pavement rehabilitation. This shouldn't be a lengthy one. Go ahead.
Gosh, I hope not.
I hope not either.
As you know, Kaufman Associates, our airport planner, and in conjunction with Armstrong Consultants, our airport engineer, we looked at our airport capital improvement plan and identified the next projects. Now, these category exclusions are required to be done prior to a grant application. So these funds are all reimbursable, as I mentioned in the financial impact. This is all part of our strategic plan as we identified in maintaining facilities. And in our master plan, we talked about the relocation of the AWAS down to the south end of the airport, east end of the airport, south of runway 27, is an area that probably won't get developed because of the terrain, for one. And we'll probably won't end up with areas where the signal can be interrupted. You can't have a structure that's higher than the antenna. And then the snow removal equipment building, as we identified as a facility to park our equipment and maintain it, get it out of the weather, can go in the vicinity of where the current AWAS is and the blockhouse. So as a matter of course, the recommendation that we're asking is to approve the authorization of services for 1902 for Kaufman Associates to complete the CADEX documentation for those items, snow equipment removal building, AWAS relocation, and the runway 9027 rehab. And those are good for 3 years. So if we don't get the grant in year one, then there's not a problem with that being bumped and that having to go back and redo this work.
So, Ken, the fiscal impact then is $4,300.
Out of pocket, correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And then overall, that of course, is grant eligible, and so our overall cost is going to be a couple $100.
And what's the timing on the AWAS? I mean, it says on the schedule here.
If you allow me to go back over the page following that board memo, it does show the airport capital improvement program that we identified. We don't have a project in 19. As we tried to get the fence project into this one, it doesn't look like there's going to be funding available. So it's going to be funded for next year for sure. And so the ADO did ask us to add another project to our schedule for 2020. So that's why we're looking at the design and the
pavement rehab design for that. So I think we'll, you know, I can't tell you we're going to get those grants for sure, but
What I'm really wondering is, can we move that AWAS up into 2020?
That's one of our conversations, is whether we can do the relocation in the same year as the design. So when we put in the application, we can add that on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My experience has always been
ask for more.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Exactly. You don't get what you don't ask for.
Right.
Okay.
And if you look at the rest of the schedule here, we're trying to get the pavement rehabs on a 3-year cycle so that we're getting that routinely done to maintain the infrastructure. If it gets to be spread out, you get in these 5-year, 6-year, 7-year periods, the pavement deteriorates rapidly. So I believe I sent you all the pavement index report that we got from the state did, and you know, our pavement looks great right now. So
I want to keep it that way.
Yeah, keeping it that way is really right. One of our strategic objectives.
Any comments from members of the authority?
Make that a target.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen many comments from members of the public. I have to ask. Anyone want to move to approve this? No takers? Come on.
I will. I move. Let me turn this on. I move to approve the authorization of services number 19-02 for Kaufman Associates to complete categorical exclusion documentation for proposed snow removal equipment building, automated weather observation system relocation, and runway 2-9-27 pavement rehabilitation projects.
You got a second anywhere?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. And action item number 5 tonight, for discussion and possible action, obtain subscription with JetNets to utilize direct marketing of new aircraft owners to relocate to Carson City Airport and develop new facilities. Go ahead, Ken.
If you recall, we had a presentation by a company called Motion Info a couple of meetings ago. And the Motion Info was about ADS-B tracking of aircraft, which we still have the ability to do in real time. But to generate reports, it also proposed creating a website and a couple other tools that were available with that. So the board directed me at that time to go out and do some more research and see what else was out in the marketplace. Through my participation in the AAAE General Aviation Committee, I was introduced to this company called JetNet LLC. And JetNet LLC started out as a database for aircraft. They also do yachts so I figure if it's high dollar items there, they said, why aren't we doing boats? But interesting enough, they maintain an ownership database of aircraft. So for example, when I went through the demo page, they looked up all light business jets for the state of California, and they came up with like a list of 3,700, for example. And they have they maintain current contact information, aircraft managers, all that sort of part of the database. So I thought, let me file that away. Very interesting. The other piece is they do live tracking through ADS-B, but they also utilize the FAA database for flight activity. So at the second page, you'll see a report that they prepared for the Carson City Airport on August 12th. And it has some graphics in there that show activity and level. And the reason that this is important is it does help. It's not definitive because it's not picking up all the VFR traffic. As ADS-B gets implemented in 2020, there'll be more of that. However, Carson City is an airport that's outside Class C or D airspace or Class B airspace, and so it's not mandatory to have that equipment to fly in and out of here.
But it will, you're going to see more and more aircraft pick that up. And a good example was in the 1980s when the requirement for transponders came about. Not everybody was going to get a transponder first, and now it's rare if you find somebody who doesn't have a transponder. It'd be almost, I would say, unlikely. Even member Hamilton has an ADS-B on his trike. What's important about this is that it helps us with the traffic count, and when we have a change in activity at the airport, now we have solid data to demonstrate that. So right now we don't count traffic count. We don't have the ability to count air taxis. We don't have the ability to count IFR traffic in and out of here. But if we had a sudden uptick in jet traffic and it changes the dynamic on the airport, we can go to the FAA with solid data to say, hey, look, you know, we're getting a ton of these type of aircraft, and a 500 a year is a threshold where it really moves the needle on airport development. So if we could demonstrate that we have, let's say, airport design category C aircraft, we're B currently, that's larger turbojets, then, and we needed to configure the airport to accommodate those, i.e. longer runway, wider runway, that sort of thing, we would have solid data to support that. Otherwise, it would be speculation. So that's example number one. Number two is we can see where our key markets are. So let's say, just from the sake of discussion, we're talking about the market segment, commercial air service feasibility study between Carson City and Las Vegas. But we can see exactly what that activity level is currently. That doesn't mean that we're picking up all the demand for it, but we can see where that our most frequent routes are. And as you can see on, I think it's the third page over, the top airports of Carson City, Las Vegas is right near the top of that. The other thing that it helps us identify is the number of flights, and it even includes things like estimated fuel burn. So if we were to do some sort of regression analysis based upon the number of airplanes that are coming in here and how much fuel we're selling, we might be able to determine, I think as member Golden or Chair Golden already knows, that some airplanes don't buy fuel here. So when they come in, they may drop their passengers. They may hang around on the tarmac for an hour and a half, 2 hours while they wait for them to do their business, come back, but they don't purchase fuel. That helps us say, hey, why aren't they purchasing fuel? In the case of Las Vegas, we might know that. If they're based in Las Vegas or on the Ribeiro side of the airport, they have a community fuel farm or consortium, and so their fuel might be lower, so therefore they're not going to buy gas.
Yeah, it could be weight. It could be runway length. It could be weather.
Yeah, temperature. There's a whole bunch of factors.
There's a lot of different factors that go into the decision. 9 out of 10 times, it's economic. They can buy it for less somewhere else.
And so as we continue through here, one of the things that really struck out to me was one, types of aircraft, but we can also go over to the type of operators that are operating here. So as you know, I've had this discussion with many of you regarding NDOT's operation out of the Carson City Airport. NDOT is a through-the-fence operator. They don't pay through-the-fence access. They're a state agency. They don't pay jet fuel tax. They don't pay fuel flowage fee. They don't pay rent. And so they're essentially utilizing our facility gratis. So my conversation with the flight department and also with the new NDOT director has been that exact same thing. I made those statements. I said, what we need to consider is a joint airport use agreement. And in that use agreement, we can identify a fee that goes towards airport, their impact on the airport, so for airport maintenance. Well, I submitted a draft to the flight department in the spring, and I threw out an arbitrary dollar figure, and they came back to me and go, well, what's that based on? Well, I can tell you now, they're 12% of the operations on the airport, just with the one aircraft they have. They've got two more that they're going to be delivering. They'll get rid of the one they have, but they're going to end up with two. They haven't been flying the Citation for quite some time because it's been in the shop, and I think they've decided that it's time to replace it as opposed to fix it. But this definitely identifies the activity level and will help us support whatever that number is for a joint maintenance agreement. Another thing that's interesting on here is there are Part 121 operators or Part 135 operators that come to our airport, commercial operators, who we could be charging a landing fee to. And landing fees are usually based on a dollar amount per 1,000 pounds gross landing weight. And it can add, this could be that bucket again that we talked about where revenue is leaking out. So let's say, let's talk about Reach Aircraft for example. Reach is the medical operator who comes in out here, air ambulances. Every time they land, we would go to be able to accumulate based upon the landing fee that we set as a board and the number of gross weight per 1,000 pounds, and let's say it's $20 for example. You bill every Part 135 operator that gross landing weight fee. Over time, you've developed a new revenue stream that we're currently not collecting. This allows us to do that research and to do that billing. NetJets is an example. They're going to pay that fee whether they go to Carson City or they go to Reno. I don't know if Minden has a mechanism set up for collecting that. Would it no. mean that NetJets would go to Minden instead of Carson City? I don't know. You'd have to look at whether having to drive from Minden to Carson City is worth your while.
We experienced that in Tahoe, and I will tell you this. I know, Ken, you're a proponent of another revenue stream. I like revenue. I'm just going to tell everybody on this airport authority. Lake Tahoe Airport has landing fees, and they're relatively benign. It's based on so many dollars and cents per 1,000 pounds. A Pilatus PC-12 might have a landing fee of like $30, okay? It is the worst thing that airport could have done, in my opinion, because what happens is these operators will choose to go to Minden or come to Carson to avoid the landing fee. And I know that, you know, that's not something everybody wants to hear, but it doesn't matter who they are. A segment of that population, and NetJets is included in that, when the conditions are right, they tell their customers, hey, you can save so much money if you are willing to drive to Carson City. And they do. Because, remember, that cost is passed on to the customer. So when the customer has to pay it, and let's just say they're staying in Zephyr Cove or Glenbrook or their second home is in Incline, going to Tahoe, going to Carson, they go to Carson. Or they'll go to Minden. We see it all the time. It is a deterrent, in my opinion, to general aviation airports. But that's just my opinion.
Oh, would you like me to respond to that? You had a look of expectation on there. We had a similar conversation at Reno with Burning Man. And Burning Man for a year operated charter services out of Reno to the Black Rock Desert. And their impact to the airport operation was significant. We didn't charge they didn't get charged a passenger facility charge. But Atlantic charged them for using their facilities. They bought fuel from them, but the airport wasn't getting any revenue out of that. So the airport did institute a fee, and it was everything from a Cessna 208, which is a relatively small aircraft, all the way up to their Dash 8 or the ATR that they were landing out in the desert, which is like a 30-passenger aircraft. And they screamed and hollered, and in the end, they paid it because it's about where your use. Now, Tahoe Valley has a whole slew of other issues associated with it that may drive people to go to the airports. Truckee has, I believe, a landing fee. I'm mistaken on that. I could be wrong.
You're mistaken.
It's possible.
They have a facility fee, but no landing fees.
Yeah. So
they don't have to pay that fee And anyone who comes in regularly, hangar tenant or not, they don't pay the fee. They're exempted. They pay a one-time fee of like $500 a year. And it's not a landing fee. It's buy fuel or you pay this fee. So they have a choice.
And many FBOs do that. Do you, at Mountain West, do you have a similar setup where if they overnight, they pay an overnight fee, even if they buy fuel?
They're overnight, they have to pay the parking, period.
Right.
Yeah.
So, in other words, there's many airports do it in a different manner. This may be something the board decides not to do. I'm just saying that this gives us the option to look at those things. Maybe we review the data and say, hey, is it significant? What's the cost of doing this? Is it worth it? So we may make that decision. But what I do, the two things I like out of it is one is be able to find out who's using an airport, help us determine whether or not that's a group we can market directly, whether or not that we can help utilize this to support our data for a future commercial operation. And we can also market people we see going to what other airports. For example, I can run a report on Minden. I can run a report on Truckee. I can run a report on Reno. And I can see who's going where. And I can directly go to those because I have the contact information and direct market them. I even mentioned this to Mr. Gian Greco. I said, why don't we team up on this where we can utilize this database to direct market people coming here to and being based at Carson City, and maybe you might be able to sell a hangar out of it. What that looks like, I'm not sure. You know, whether we charge them a fee, whether we partner in some manner. But the point is that this is a powerful tool. And I think this will help us in our goal of economic activity and financial stability. If we're able to draw if we can get the state, based upon this report alone, into a joint maintenance agreement, that'll pay for the first 3 or 4 or 5 years of just having this subscription, because that will be an annual agreement set with CPI. If we can get one guy to relocate here based upon their use of the Carson City Airport or they want to leave California, this will pay for it. So I think it's a powerful tool. I'd like to propose that I tried to see if we could get a trial subscription. It's an annual deal. You get a discount if you pay for it in 1 year. You can save 3%. You can do it monthly. There are ideas they want to see subscription retention. They don't want us to be a one and done. So therefore, they want it to be a powerful tool for us. So I think it's a cooperative effort on that. We'd like to generate new business and. They'd like us to buy their product.
Linda?
Well, my feeling about this is the comments that were made here earlier about not having matrix. This gives us the ability to have accurate matrix on our airport. Now, there are some shortcomings because of various equipment on airplanes and so forth. But if we intend to move forward with legitimate data on airport, I think that this is a great beginning. And I would suggest that we do it for a year and that we pay for it at the lowest cost for that year, which is upfront cost for what you're talking about. And as so far as the landing fees and other things are concerned, once you have the data, then you can start talking about what you can do with that information. You don't have to start charging people day one. You can wait until you've had 6 months of data and analyze that and see where you're going and what the opportunities. As far as having the data to get a hold of the direct marketing to the people who are using our airport, I think this is very worthwhile.
John?
One thing I've noticed, having been in the information business and watching it morph into this gigantic thing that some of it bad, some of it good, is that the future is information and distribution and utilizing that information to utilize it so that you can do distribution. So, and it ties right back. You get back to the information, which is now IT, of course. And so I'm for it too.
Clyde?
Ken, you introduced me to this, I don't know, a couple months ago in your office, and I was impressed with it from that point forward. So I'm all in, but not maybe now. And the reason why is because I'm not seeing a plan on how we make a correlation between the expense of about $5,000 a year and how that directly correlates to future revenue. How do we make that connection? So if I could see how we can start seeing how we're going to capture the increased revenue as a result of the data that we've collected, I'd feel a lot more comfortable with it.
Well, my first one is on the list is the low-hanging fruit, and that's the NDOT agreement. This gives us solid data on that alone.
With all due respect, Claude, I'm just sharing my opinion. I actually see, and I'm not one for spending money needlessly. Right. We don't want to do that. I can actually see a pretty quick return on investment in this, and I think it's a low-risk, high-yield investment whereby the risk is 1 year, and it's $5,000 roughly. Oh, my apologies.
Minus 3%. The one for 5 grand doesn't include the activity. It only includes the database for.
Right, you want the activity.
Okay, my apologies. Yeah. Still, so we're looking at 6111. Even so, another $1,200. All it's going to take is one aircraft that we hook, line, and sinker into the airport and pull them in as a customer, and that just paid for itself in flow fee, tax revenue, you name it. It'll pay for itself. It really will. And that's my perspective. I just want to share that with you.
I appreciate you sharing that. And this board has far more experience in these areas than I do, and I totally respect you guys' experience and the feedback. Thank you.
Just quick question. This is an alternative to the present, to the proposal we saw a bit ago. And this is, that was, as I recall, about 10,000.
Yeah, it was over 11.
Oh, actually. Okay.
Yeah, it was like, we did the 2-year subscription, was $800 a month.
Okay.
Roughly.
So that's the cost comparison. In terms of the data that you get, how would you compare these guys to what we saw?
They didn't have the database. Ocean Info didn't have the database. It was more about an activity issue. It's not about, but being able to reach in and find the aircraft owner, Falcon 10 Delta Mike lands, I can go on the FAA website and pull up via N number search the LLC info, but it doesn't give me a contact name. It doesn't give me a phone number.
Okay.
This allows that.
Okay.
You just saw the Business View article that we had completed. I was going to talk about that in the manager's report. But if we use that, the way that was structured, we put that together, the direct marketing package, about why it's a great reason to leave the state of California and come be based in Nevada. I was sharing this with Member Rogers just the other day. It was something I did. I put together my 365-day plan that I showed why it's a good reason to be in Nevada, and what taxes that we don't have, and what regulation and restrictions that we don't have. I think that makes a powerful marketing tool. And this helps you find the people that you want to direct market.
Well, Paul, let me get to that.
That's great. Thank you.
Paul, go ahead.
Just one question. Month ago, it was another company. Now it's JetNet. Have we looked at any other? I mean, this looks pretty complete. Is there any other possibilities? And where do they actually get the data from the probes that are up on your office there? Or?
Well, database for the Aircraft Owner Partnership. This started with when they first started this company in 1988. Yeah. So they've developed these relationships with these management firms, leasing firms, aircraft purchasers. The way a lot of people use this, this might be something that Steve Lewis utilizes, is this is about buying and selling aircraft. So these guys are always looking. In this business, you don't hang on to an airplane for 20 years. You know, you use it for a while, you get to your C or D check, and then you're like, I'm not putting more money in that. And you look for another market. But they track that so that the brokers come to them and say, what's the history of this airplane? Where's it at? What's it going? So they have a track record with that. I asked, when I was at the AAAE convention in Boston, I specifically went around and looked for people who try to provide this kind of data. Harris Corp was one that does. But they, Harris Corp wants to sell you their equipment as well. So this is strictly an informational component. So I found that a little bit more attractive. Harris never came back to me with a proposal. So I figured I wasn't a big enough cog for them in the wheel. So there may be other ones out there, but this is something that came to me through direct connection, through a company or an airport in back east, Morristown, New Jersey. They ran a report for me on Carson City, and I just was awed. Yeah.
Okay, Linda?
The one thing I might note, too, is when I did the based aircraft, one of the reasons that our numbers are higher than the assessor's office is I had two screens up, and I put in the tail number, and if they said to the FAA that they were based in Carson City and they didn't have any record of being anywhere else, I listed them as Carson City, and we should be able to contact those people if we had contact information on them. And we said, okay, look, if you're in New Jersey and the reason you're saying you're in Carson City is because you don't want to pay property taxes in New Jersey, then you're going to be paying property taxes here, folks. And
they do that.
Yes. And the thing is, there was no way they would give you the name of the company, but unless you wanted to spend 4 or 5 hours trying to figure out where these people actually were and all that sort of thing, you can't track it down. If we had this database, that based aircraft report would have looked a whole lot different.
And keep in mind, too, though, there are, in you know, devil's advocate here, there are LLCs and corporations that are formed in the state of Nevada that hold aircraft because of anonymity of assets, anonymity of ownership. Nevada is the number two state for incorporation in the union after Delaware. Exactly. I'm very familiar with that process due to my background and a lot of experience in it. So a lot of people will use Carson City as an address, but the airplane's never here.
And you may recall from our survey that one of our tenants on the airfield said he had 40 aircraft, but they were all leased and they were out in other areas.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, so that just feeds to your point exactly, that there are some anomalies like that. But yeah. I think that this gives us a starting point.
Well, I'm very impressed with this. I'd like to know what the pleasure of the board is. And then after we take a vote, I do want to add one little item to this discussion. So, what's the pleasure of the board on this?
Let's put a motion out there.
Okay. Go ahead, John.
You want me to read them?
Ask and you shall receive, right?
Okay. No. Let her, go ahead. The motion I recommended was approval for staff to complete the Aerodex Elite subscription to JetNet LLC Flight Activity Information and Aircraft Database.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Oh, my apologies. Any public comment? Okay. Let me state for the record, Ken.
Yes, sir.
And I'll try to get this information to you, but you might want to write this down, and this would be an adjunct to this. I think this is good because, hey, they're giving you the information. You don't have to extract it. Mm-hmm. FlightAware, I'm sure you're familiar with them. I received something from them in the mail the other day, and they wanted us to, at no charge, of course, install an ADS-B receiver at our facilities, each one of them. And then they would give us the information. Now, nowhere near as refined as this, but they would give us the ADS-B information that they would receive. I would suggest that we do that, or we do it collectively, and we put that receiver either on our building or the airport terminal building, and then let FlightAware give us that information in addition to this.
I did look at FlightAware, and I'll go back and refresh my memory on it. I don't know if they'll provide that to you in a report format unless you purchase something. I think it's raw data. They give you the live feed, and that's right. Much like this Motion Info. We have the live feed on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest downfall for Carson and airports like us, like Minden, is that we're below radar coverage. ADS-B is really predicated on that. One thing JetNet LLC does is they go into the FAA database and they extract the raw data, and that's based on a partnership that they've had with them. I don't know if FlightAware has something similar. I'm just saying. I looked at their thing. Okay. I'll go back and I'll review.
Just saying they sent us something. Wanted to put a receiver, you know, at no cost to us. They'd give us the data.
That's the same thing that Motion Info does.
Right.
Yeah. I'll look at that.
I'm just saying it's out there. But this is good. You look at $6,000 in a year, you don't have to go through the data. It's at your fingertips. Think of the human cost, the human resource cost.
Oh, I did.
Okay.
you see where I was heading with that. One less employee.
Looking for one-stop shopping, are we?
That's right. Okay. So, airport engineers report. I don't think we have one, do we?
We do have one. It's in the packet.
Okay.
It basically talked about the CADEX for the three projects that we discussed. We're still working on the research for the grates to cover the culvert on the south end of the airport by the perimeter road by the airport fire department. Mm-hmm. Gurney Canyon runs through there. There's a couple of culverts, and so that's a weak spot in security. Obviously, we can fence along the top of it, but critters and people could walk underneath. So one of the things they're looking for is some grading systems that still allow the water flow but don't allow for the transit of people or animals through that culvert. The supplemental grant, remember we applied for that for the land acquisition? Well, there's a second round coming up in the next year. I don't know if we're going to score any higher. I asked about submitting an additional grant and maybe with a project that would score higher, and they said, no, they're only drawing it from the first pool of applications. I think that's all on that. I believe that concludes the engineering report. So we're going to be at the front of the pile with our we've already submitted the category exclusion and the cultural survey for the fence project. So we're ahead of the October 1 deadline, but we will not. They won't look at it until they're done with what their current workload is.
Ken, do you know if Atkins marked True North wherever it is that you want?
They haven't yet.
Okay,
but they will.
They are going to do that.
Yeah, okay. And there's a overall system wide True North change coming up.
We don't plan on doing the marking until October, but we need it somewhere,
right.
Wherever it is.
And we're basically, the grant for the master plan is basically complete. There's a couple of changes to the ALP and the development concept we talked about with the property to the east. Mm-hmm. So that's going to get included on those, and that'll be sent to the FAA. But, yes, they're still on board with that, Linda.
All right. Can we have your report, Ken?
I'm going to let the written report stand in here with just a couple of exceptions. I do have a meeting with the transportation, what do they call it, aide for Senator Mark Amaday. I had a long conversation with her in the spring, and so she's out here in the district, and she's going to come by for a tour. I was hoping she'll bring the congressman with her, as he had mentioned he was interested. And the other issue I already mentioned about NNDA, that's tomorrow. And then the one conference that may be of interest as far as our economic development and marketing is concerned is the National Business Association Conference in Vegas. It's every other year it's in Orlando, and then the following year is in Las Vegas. This year is in Las Vegas, so it's a little bit closer. That might be worth a trip down there and on a fact-finding mission, but also maybe ability to market some direct operators. So I thought I'd put that out in front of the board. If anybody has any objection, you can I'm not asking for a vote on it, so I'm just putting it out there for discussion.
I'll give you a comment on it. I've been before. I may go this year just because it's in Vegas. I wouldn't travel to Orlando for it. No way. It's more of a trade show
mm-hmm.
than anything else. It's not it's really a lot of products being right. offered to the public. As much as I wanted it to be business development, which there is some, I would say 15-20% business development opportunity. The balance of it is a trade show for products and services to aircraft.
Right. Aircraft managers and that whole thing.
Yeah, it's you know, for example, you'll see the guys who manufacture fuel trucks.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be there with fuel right. trucks on the convention center floor. There's a company that manufactures really nice cockpit seats. They have the seats right there. You can sit in the seats. A lot of products geared towards business aviation interests. Not a lot there from charter operators, if anything. Again, it's vendors is what it is. And it's interesting. I'd encourage it, and I may go.
Yeah, there's also aircraft sales.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't gain a whole lot out of it last time, but I felt it was good to go for a day, and I did.
Well, one of our partners in this whole nighttime instrument approach study is the NBAA.
Yeah.
We're using them as a tool to help support getting this project done. And I've met with them at a couple different conferences that they've been at. So I'm trying to keep that dialogue.
You'll find going. Things like that going on there. It's just not.
Yeah, it's not geared towards.
Yeah, it's geared towards the guy who owns a Citation jet or a small flight department that is going there not to generate new business, but to look at the product lines that are available. Like the avionics guys will all be there. With their displays.
And I spoke to a couple of people on the GA committee, and one of the gals who's serving on the subcommittee with me on marketing and airport public relations, Addison from Dallas, Texas, at airport has a booth on the convention floor.
So oh, yeah.
There's some of that. So
there is.
I'll leave it at that. If there's any issue about that, please let me know.
Could I make
I've also been appointed. Go ahead.
Hold on.
When you go to something like that, what package do you use to market?
Well,
is it paper, sing and dance?
Usually currently, like when I go to these conferences for the airport side, I'm meeting Chair Golden mentioned, a lot of vendors, but I'm also talking with other airport managers and people in other airport departments. So that's a different program. This piece, it would be about Carson City. Why would you base at Carson City? So we'd make a one sheet, in the industry would be called, something you could hand over, have your card on it, and say, hey, have you looked at Carson City? Hey, I see you gather data. You know, I see you flying to Carson City a lot. Hey, what do you think about it? Have you ever thought of it?
That's my question.
Right.
What do we have, a one sheet or a glossy?
Yeah, we would create something exactly like that. So yeah. That
would be a good project.
Right. Right.
Marketing.
Yep.
One thing that right. anybody can hand, come to Carson.
Yep.
Yeah. It wouldn't, all I can say, I know John wants to say something, but I'll just say this. For a day to go down there, it's no skin off of our teeth for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's worth it to check it out if you've never been before. Okay. I can't say anything negative about it. You'll get something positive out of it, that's for sure. John?
What I was going to say is that I've been impressed with Ken's ability to go to these things and generate stuff, not necessarily stuff that we would have expected, not necessarily all economic development, but get ideas, etc. He's very good at figuring out how to leverage situations that he finds on the floor when he gets there and says, oh. And he makes the connections in his mind.
Yeah, and you might, you'll get some benefit out of this for sure. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. Well, two other activities that...
But don't spend any money.
two other activities that I'm involved in. As you know, I'm chairing the subcommittee on public relations and marketing. And as I told them when I took that on, that I'm doing that out of very selfish reasons, and I hope they are too. So we've got a committee now of 8 people from different airports, primarily in the West, but there's an East Coast, a South, a Southeast, a Southwest. And so we're working on putting tools together to make it easy for airport, small airports to market their facility. The idea is that we're going to create these templates that we can use to poll and do a press release, use it to develop a marketing plan. So all this will come back to benefit our organization. So I felt that was worth my time. The other one that I got appointed to when I was in Tucson was to take over the legislative committee for the Southwest chapter of the AAAE. And so as I talked to our own state chapter, Airport Association, being in touch with the legislative bodies and what the trends are in the legislature, this gives me a front seat to that and allows me to, you know, interact with maybe congressional folks that aren't necessarily in our state, but maybe will have influence on some of these things. So I thought that was a really unique opportunity, and that's why, as you knew, I was nominated both for the national AAAE committee, but also the chapter. I didn't make either one of those board of directors, but they saw fit to appoint me to the legislative committee. So I think that that will be really a bonus for our organization. And that concludes my report, with the exception of 3 videos. And if you'll indulge me for just a second while I pull that up. These are all 1 minute or less.
I like that.
You're running out of minutes, partner.
And here goes the first one. Okay, this is that approach that Lean Engineering is proposing for Carson City. I don't know if you can pick out the airport
here,
but this is the daylight view. And so you can see there's significant terrain in the area.
You see the terrain?
Yes, there is.
My first night flight, that's what my instructor asked me.
Can you see the terrain? You know what?
The airport's over here.
You know what the King video used to say? If you don't like what you're seeing at night while you're flying, turn the lights off.
Right?
Yeah.
But I really like this simulation because it is
gears down.
1,000 words of a technical report. Mm-hmm. This says it in 1 minute.
This is great.
So if you've got the gist of this one, let me show you the one at night. Oops.
Whatever. Now, does that provide adequate terrain clearance?
That approach does, yes.
Okay.
Okay. This is the airport at night. Now, you don't have any terrain reference there. And this is what got the nighttime restriction put on here. This portion of the segment of the approach is actually the visual segment of any of these approaches. These are non-precision approaches, which means that normally when you fly IFR to an airport that has a precision approach, you reach a decision height, like at Reno, you're a half mile from the runway, you're 200 feet. If you don't see the environment, then you execute a missed approach. Approach like this, you're actually about 4 or 5 miles out where this visual section takes over, and then you have to navigate the rest of the way to the airport. If this is a circling approach, it doesn't line up directly to the runway like this one does not.
Yeah, that's an offset.
Yeah, you're offset. So you have to have this visual section to be able to navigate the rest of the way. So as you can see, poor terrain reference.
So where's the good one?
Now, I'll show you that, but I just want you to know that Carson City really does not look that bright at night. So keep that in mind. The lighting there is a little exaggerated.
Okay.
See,
and there's the road that goes to Reno.
Yeah.
Over on the right-hand side.
Okay,
this one is our preferred approach.
Uh-huh.
See the rabbit?
Yep.
So when you're over that lighting, you don't have to worry about that terrain.
Because you aim for the lighting and follow it in.
You are given this even lower the minimums on the approach by having this in there.
Who owns the land where the lighting is, Ken?
Well, the one furthest out is, I believe, BLM. The second one is the dump. And the third one is right off of 50, so that's private property. There's some industrial buildings around there. And these would be built on poles. So as you pass each segment of this, you still have the guidance. And then when you get out here, this doesn't really show it well, but you'd have an approach lighting system that would extend out from the runway.
Yep.
That's what that is right there. So as you get along here and you turn final, then you're lined up with the approach lighting system. So this is significant. This approach and these simulations should really assist the decision makers in this process. If I show this to Congressman Amadei, he is going to say, well, why don't we have this?
Yeah, and you know what you can ask Mark? How many times he's flown in and out of here? Because he probably has.
I'm sure he has.
That was my experience. One of our best customers was Dean Heller for quite a while. Mm-hmm. He's not any longer, of course. But he was one of our best customers.
Nice flies in the Smith Valley.
I reckon so, if he's lucky.
So that concludes my report.
Thank you. Oh, well, Steve's not here, so no legal counsel report. Treasurer's report, John.
In the interest of time, I'll just point out just a couple of items. We have completed the year-end, gathering of data, and the final results show that we last on a year.
Turn your mic on, John.
On a year-over-year comparison, last year, which ended in June 30th, compared to the previous year, we had a 7% increase in revenue.
Good.
And a 1% decrease in operating expenses. So the net result was an 8% improvement in profitability on an operating basis. That's well in excess of anybody's CPI number, I assume, so people are happy with that. And then we took the money that we earned by doing that, and we spent it on our initial analysis for the lighting system, for the night approach system, and a little bit more. So
keep up the good work.
Yeah. So that's all good news. We've only had one month so far in this fiscal year, the month of July. The comparison of the costs and revenues to budget doesn't mean much after 1 month, but we're doing fine. There's little wild variations depending on whether or not that particular month we spent against a specific line item. But there's no watch-outs in there. And then the last thing I'll mention is that on our balance sheet, we have four items listed under our cash on our balance sheet. We have about $900,000 slightly over $1 million in cash is now invested in our investment fund. Thank you, Linda. Earning money for us as we speak. And I think that's Ken's done now with the transfers into that fund. I think that we have the correct amount of our cash in more readily accessible accounts, very accessible accounts, and the rest of it's all out there earning money for us. So I think that's where we've completed that transition. That's it.
Okay, fantastic. Any reports from any of the airport authority members? I have one quick comment, just a reiteration, so to confirm, Bradley, you're going to work with Ken and get those targets done before our next meeting?
Yep.
Fantastic. Thank you again. Public comment, any members of the public? Okay. John, I'm sorry.
That's
John.
Right. That's right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to make the point. I was at the NNDA breakfast for the board of the NNDA this morning, and they were talking about the barbecue tomorrow. And so if any airport authority members want to go. They said, we'd like board members of NNDA to tell them that you're coming because they got to feed people. But if you show up, and that's an organization, and I'm really pleased that Ken's interacting with them the way he is, because that's an organization that tries to bring in new businesses and to massage existing businesses here. So it'd be good to keep up a good relationship with it.
And what time is that?
Yeah.
4:00?
I think it starts at dinner might start at 6:00. I'm not.
And where's it
located? I'll look on the
terminal.
Oh, at the terminal.
Yeah. I'll look on the invitation and confirm that for you. Yeah, I might have it here on my email.
If we had, one or two show up, I may or may not, because my wife has had some health stuff.
It's free food.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to try not to. Not if the food isn't it. I've been running ragged. I was wheels up this morning at 7:30 into California.
Were you in a plane?
Yes.
I just want to say that if we started at 4, we'd been out of here 2 hours ago.
I'm still not buying that. Okay.
He's going to check the time.
That's fine. While he's checking the time.
It is 4:30 to 6:30.
Okay.
4:30.
Any agenda items for the next board meeting? Anyone? Okay.
The targets will be.
I may have one regarding the interlocal agreement with Carson City. I've been looking over that and working on it, so I'll get with you with that.
Yeah, okay. One last thing. If we're going to do something, and I don't know that we are on this insurance thing, we probably should contact the city manager and the risk manager and just alert them that we're talking about this.
Okay. Well, on that note, we're adjourned at 10 minutes of 9.
Thank you. Here.